Dear listeners, dear friends, we are going to proceed with our talk. The next one today will be on education. And of course, in the context with Steiner's special scientific work. Well, education is a broad subject, and we want to take into account especially the aspect of how can we learn to learn, not being just mechanical, repetitive beings of what we have been taught. And the question, how can we learn to learn, or we could even say, how can we learn to evolve? Because it's all about evolution in development of human beings, of other beings. There is evolution on all levels of being, not only physical, which is often neglected. So how can we learn to evolve, to become more and more true to our own inner being, which is rather hidden often? And a sub-question of this question is, of course, how can we learn to think in order to evolve in such a desired direction? Thinking is not just a process of informing us, because I think there was never a world or a time in which so many people had so many informations about so many things, and at the same time had so little thoughts. Now, let's start in the development of Rudolf Steiner's that led him to become really the inventor, if you like, of a new contemporary art of education. I say art of education with consciousness because it should become an art. And we are going into it towards the end of the lecture. What concretely is the art of education? And when Steiner was a young man, he lived in Vienna, and he was about in his 20s when a task came to him which prepared him for his future pedagogical work. He was asked to become the teacher, private teacher, in a Jewish family, interesting, in Vienna. They had four kids, and one of them was a bit considered to be backwards. So he needed a special teaching, which made it necessary that Steiner really devoted for 1 hour a day many hours preparation, he said in his autobiography, in order to meticulously form the teaching or the presence with this boy of 10 years in such a way that every minute was meaningfully used. He couldn't improvise in such a situation. And in fact, after 2 years, there was quite a considerable success. His method led to this boy becoming healthy, becoming able to go to the normal school. And later he even entered university and studied medicine up to the day when he was a victim in the First World War. And note, in the beginning of the education by Steiner, he was 10 years old and he was not able to read or to write. So he was really considered hopeless, more or less. So by this miraculous method, Steiner learned, and he said, a lot about the human nature by having to deal with an abnormal human nature. That can be very, very fruitful. By the way, in this family, there were other boys, and one of them was quite cheeky. And once he stood in front of Steiner when he came in and said, "You are sillier than three asses." Three is quite a good number. And Steiner was, of course, amused. I don't know how much he could show it to, but it was quite a funny situation. Anyway, he had very good terms. He was on very good terms with his family because of this successful education of the boy up to a certain time when there was a grief misunderstanding between the parents on Steiner. And this concerned the new wave of anti-Semitism that was born also in Vienna, in Paris, of course, in France, around the case of General, oder was war es, Dreyfus. All misunderstandings. Steiner wrote an essay which was misunderstood by many people, in which he only said the idea of building a new state of Israel, a national state, in his eyes was not a contemporary good idea. Whereas, in fact, most modern Jewish people, also in Austria, in Hungary, they were so-called assimilated. They were part of the bigger nations they lived in. They were integrated and used their religious rites in a private manner, of course, or they went to the synagogue, but they didn't think of erecting a Jewish state. This was the great idea of Theodor Herzl. We have touched on that a little bit in earlier talks. And if you read what Steiner wrote about why this is not a good idea, you can feel in the core why he is not a friend of the State of Israel, which doesn't mean, of course, he was becoming anti-Semite. Already the fact that he was in this family proves the contrary. He had no problems with any individual, but he had of Jewish background, but he had problems with people who thought you have to make a modern Jewish state. This just introduction wise, because we have today again a kind of a wave of anti-Semitism accusations against Steiner and also Waldorf. I'm coming back to that later. Now let's turn to his earliest insights into the human nature to be educated. No one can educate a human nature, I think, who is not clear that the human nature is fourfold: physical, etheric, astral, and the ego. So the educator has to be conscious that he is standing or in front of a compound being and with its own laws. For example, the physical body develops within 7 years. In fact, after 7 years, nobody of us has the same physical material particles in his body than before. It changes all the time. After 7 years, you are a new physical entity, so to speak. And this is important for education. The child comes into and wants to develop the physical body in the best possible way. Now, when the child is between birth and 7 years old, it has an innate belief that the world is good. The world it is born in is good, is a good world. Therefore, it has the innate drive to imitate whatever it encounters. It's all good. And it wants to imitate the world or the deeds or the acts of the persons around him. That, of course, can show us that we have a tremendous responsibility to surround the child with the right deeds and acts and even thoughts. Even thoughts can be picked up inwardly, imitated. Speech, of course. Imitation is the key for the first 7 years period of every child. That's before the schooling starts. Then when the schooling starts, apart from kindergarten, of course, we have the second period, which is now devoted in the evolution of the child to develop the ether body, the etherical body, in the right way. And here there is a shift of worldview, if you like. It's not only the world is good, now it is the world is beautiful. In the second period, the world seems to be something full of beauty. And this should be reckoned with by the educators, surrounding the child with as much beauty as possible, pointing to the beauty in nature, sunrise, sunset, all of this, music, art. That's the natural drive to be surrounded by beauty. That's the second 7 years period, in which the child puts out its own teeth already before the second teeth and enters the third 7 years period, in which another rule is experienced by the child when looking at the world. Now it's not the good world, the beautiful world, maybe in the background, but now in the foreground is the world is true. And it expects to be introduced into this world of truth. A tremendous task today, when it is surrounded at home or in school or whatever by all the media things, which is usually full of fantasy and lies. And in an age of beginning with 14 years old, the world is true. That means the child has the impulse to find judgments about this and that, not before. Now is the time of educating in, say, science, Goethean science, natural science. The world has to be understood in its laws. That starts only in these years after what Steiner calls the birth of the astral body. There are actually, in his view, three births: the physical, the etheric with seven, the astral with 14. And when I say birth, that means there is a growing independence from the astral sheath of the mother. When the child gets 14, the etheric sheath of the mother, when the child gets about 7, and the etheric sheath of the mother has, of course, all the temperament and habits of the older person, and this is a freeing process. And education should really be in tune with these laws of development of the threefold or fourfold human being. The fourth element is the ego that comes only to real development with about 20 or 21 years. What is before as an ego is a reflex, so to speak. It's not a fully born ego. When the child says ego or ich with 3 or 4 years already, that comes later. So Steiner wanted education to be in tune with these natural laws of development and help the individual to develop according these laws, to find his own being, which is deeply hidden. And Steiner had a good example in his own life, any child who is in a way considered handicapped, backward, of course there is a deep being in this child as well, an individuality. Or take the extreme example of Kaspar Hauser, who was imprisoned for many, many years. What does that mean for his deeper inner individuality? It is there, of course, but it can't show itself easily, if at all. And education is a tool that the child learns to develop itself, its own true being. Education is not there to engender parrots of the being of the adults, but of getting out to the light, the inherent individuality of each human being. That task shows immediately that the educator has to have an interest in the child, even in the hardly or even unseen part of it, and be conscious there is a little God in this child, but this little God is not able to speak, to manifest directly, and even sometimes it manifests indirectly in caricatures, anger or whatever character traits. So the educator should be having a kind of a faculty of divination, I don't know whether this is the right word, divination, intuition, to get to the unseen source inwardly. And of course, this is if you like, a holy element that you should have the greatest respect of. The unseen little God, I call it, in every human being, we should have the greatest respect of. That's the morality basis for the educator. Now, if we look around today, this basis is almost not existing anymore. So this basis for this sort of education has to be cultivated in the educator. The educator should be having gone through a process of self-education to such a degree that he can fulfill these demands, so to speak, when having a class in front of him. So we have this pedagogical impulse was getting ripe in the life of Steiner in the year 1919, where he had already made a contact with a man who had a factory of producing cigarettes. All the smokers among our listeners might be very happy about the fact that it was a factory of cigarettes who gave birth to the first Waldorf school in Stuttgart. Because the educator there, the owner of the factory, was a Mr. Molt, who gave a lot of money to this impulse of Steiner's. And of course, he sent many of his own workers, children, to this first school. So there was a connection with a living a factory. And it started in autumn of 1919, after the First World War. Steiner chose the first teachers for the first school by giving a lecture course on, I think in English it is published under the title Study of Man. Some absurd discussions have arisen about the title, I know that. And some people said, we can't call it Study of Man anymore. This is male chauvinism. Everyone understands who can think a little bit clearly that the word man can as easily used for a woman biologically as for a man. But now I think it is called out of political correctness reasons, the study of the human being. Why not? But it's not necessary. It's a superfluous operation in linguistics. And this is just one important aim of education in the sense of Steiner. We can call it Waldorf since its founding in 1919, that the human being gets more and more independent in his thoughts from mere words and formulation, which is not so easy. Because you can see many people immediately react to words. Well, before we react to a word somebody uses, we should think, what does he mean? And that's the essential thing. So Waldorf education should really also free the inner life from being too closely put into the armor of verbal formulations. That can only be done if the teacher himself is free from, you know, Schlagwörtern, what is that in English? Formulas, slogans, thoughtless words. Now, in order to be just to the human nature, you have to find, and Steiner made a deep research, what is the prerequisite of learning in life? Not just generally evolution and this and that, but how is something becoming a faculty? Say, to learn to write, to learn to speak, to learn some facts, geology or this and that. What is necessary that learning process in the soul takes place? The answer, briefly, is you have to be able to forget. There is a good forgetting, a necessary one. If a child is not allowed to forget and is always reminded of what it has learned yesterday, you actually block the learning process. You fill it up with useless, not flowing body of informations. Because of that, Steiner organized, for example, the teaching goes in epochs. 3 weeks this, 3 weeks another Fach discipline, and in the second 3 weeks you are allowed, not to say you must, you actually do forget what you have taken up. And the time of forgetting is the time in which what you have taken up is being able to become a faculty. So if you want people to develop faculties, give them the chance not only to be conscious all the time about the same thing, but also to be deconscious or to forget. Forgetting is part of learning. That is, I think, largely forgotten today. This is not a good forgetting. And this is insight into how the human soul transforms something which it has taken from the world into something which is an individual faculty. That's why you never have all the time, every day, the same subject that you have to have in mind, can always be asked by the teacher about it, and the good pupil seemingly gives them quick answers. But that's maybe not the pupil that learns most, because he cannot forget. So forgetting and waking are in a polarity that should be balanced. That is, I think, true in the whole, even later adult life. And people who are not able to forget are really having difficulties in learning in the same way that others could. This is a fundamental law in Waldorf pedagogy, that you have a structured way of bringing the material, so to speak, into your class, so that you forget, and then you go again, and then you go back to the same epoch and repeat after a while, and then you can see that some things have really grown in the meantime. These are just very slight points about the structure of Waldorf pedagogy. Another thing is that Steiner wanted that the college of teachers is self-governing. They decide whom they engage. They decide about the finances of the teachers, etc. And the government, the state, has as little influence as possible. That means, as a so-called not state school, but private school, it means, of course, private sponsoring, funding, which worked to a certain degree, but it has, I think, given up in many places. In Germany, it was, for example, after, in the beginning of the 70s, there was a boom of Waldorf schools. They needed more and more teachers, whereas the question is, where are the teachers? How can you find teachers who are able to fulfill what is necessary in a Waldorf school? So there was an overflow of uneducated teachers, so to speak. And at the same time, the state took over part of the management, the finance. And by financing the schools lost a certain amount of sovereignty. I think in the United States there is a division between schools that are totally state schools, Waldorf, called, and a few which are quite expensive private schools still. It's not very happy. Steiner envisaged in, I think, 1920 already, a kind of a world school community to organize Waldorf education globally, not through the states. And that is something that has not been really fulfilled. The dependency of the state is bigger than it should be. Now, I want to finalize with a few words about why did Steiner want education to be an art? He talks of education as an art. And I want to go back to what I developed a little bit earlier. An artist, the way Steiner understood it, is someone who does not only relate to what has become in the world and is finished, is there, and can be photographed or painted or described as it is there, finished. But an artist, in his sense, is always somebody who sees not only what has been become, but what can become. So a seed of potential evolution. And that's exactly what the teacher needs. He needs to have an intuition into what can become of this boy or this girl. It is not there, you don't see it. But if you get it, if you grasp the reality of this seed, then you know in what way you can give an impulse to this person, which is something totally different from just putting your knowledge and your soul content over, like into the child as a bag of your riches. This is totally different. And in that sense, education can become an art if the educator works with the possible, with the becoming in the boy or the girl, and needs to develop that faculty, then he can become an artist of education. And otherwise, it will not work. Well, these are very sketchy points again, I'm sure. And we will all go through again later on and get a bit more differentiation, if necessary. Thank you for your attention. Until next time.